This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Been a rough few weeks for the State Department of Health and Human Services. Doctors are suing over what they say is a disaster in the state's Medicaid reimbursement system. Meanwhile, DHHS Director Aldana Vosh has had to apologize for sending Medicaid insurance cards to the wrong addresses. The mistake compromised the privacy of nearly 50,000 children. And Vosh is still operating under the threat of sanctions from the U.S. Department of Agriculture over yet another issue. The USDA has called the state on its lengthy delays in processing food stamp applications. We'll talk about that and more with our news roundtable. Jessica Jones is WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Welcome, Jessica. Good to have you here.
Thanks.
Laura Leslie's with us, WRAL's Capital Bureau Chief. Hi, Laura.
Hello. Nice to be back.
Also with us, Michael Biesecker, Associated Press Reporter. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you, Frank.
Jessica, let me start with you, because there's been a lot to talk about out of Raleigh this week, but maybe we should start with a visitor to the city, Barack Obama. The president spoke at NC State about job creation.
You know, a lot of companies around the world are starting to talk about bringing jobs back to the United States, bringing jobs back to places like North Carolina, partly because we got cheap energy costs, we got the best workers in the world, we got the best university systems in the world, and we got the largest market in the world. So the pieces are there to restore some of the ground that the middle class has lost in recent decades. Start raising wages for American families. But it requires us to take action. This has to be a year of action.
I suppose this is as good a year as any to get busy. Jessica, tell us more about the president's speech in Raleigh this week.
Well, the biggest part of the president's speech was that he made the announcement that NC State is going to be the site of a new consortium that's focused on inventing, designing, and making what are called wide bandgap semiconductors. And it's part of this effort to create hubs where innovative, interesting products are invented and designed and manufactured. And the idea is that that will help to create more jobs. Senator Kay Hagan's office put out a press release saying that this would create about 1,000 jobs right from the beginning. But I think the idea is to create centers of manufacturing and industry in the United States, to create great products that could be sold. And President Obama talked about that in his speech. The underlying theme of the speech, though, that I was really struck by was his focus on the middle class, making sure that more middle class people have jobs, that they have access to high-tech jobs, and then that they have the money to buy products, and that the world will buy products from us instead of, our buying cell phones made with semiconductors that are manufactured in other countries. But that's part of a big push by the White House to encourage, good high-tech jobs in the United States that will benefit middle-class families.
So we could speculate about whether or not it will create jobs. But Laura, what it does suggest is that there is an underlying anxiety within the middle class about job security.
And rightly so, given the employment situation over the last few years. But, there's a lot of discussion about what is going to be the next big thing. And North Carolina has been looking for that for a long time, I think. And this is an interesting area where the president and Governor Pat McCrory are kind of, singing from the same hymnal. Both of them are talking about sort of a renaissance in manufacturing, high-tech manufacturing, and then the sort of overriding idea behind that being, you cannot survive on a service sector industry alone. You have to make stuff, whatever that stuff is. And the more palatable it is to the rest of the world, the more exportable it is, the better off you are. However, again, we come down to the question, what this grant program, this hub is designed to do is to make these new semiconductors more cost effective and to develop different technology that can make use of them. So to come sort of create a market for them. So, I think it's going to be many years before we really know what kind of an impact this could have on the triangle. But, it could actually be huge. This is one of the biggest clean tech areas in the U.S., if not the biggest. And this will certainly just make it bigger.
But it raises questions if we're talking about unemployment. So the possibility of creating a whole industry, not just the science and the technology that creates the thing, but the whole industry around it that circulates the capital, that could be good. But, if we're thinking about jobs and unemployment, big questions about whether to increase and expand unemployment benefits. And I know, in fact, let me start with you, Laura. WRAL did a fact check, right, on Governor McCrory's claim that people have come to North Carolina for unemployment benefits.
Right. Well, apparently we're told that he heard that from someone. But, the truth is you can't move to North Carolina and not work in North Carolina and claim unemployment benefits. That's not how it works. You can only claim unemployment benefits from the last place you worked under their rules. Now, you can be living here and be getting Oklahoma unemployment checks, perhaps, but you can't come here and for the unemployment benefits unless you're already figuring out that you're going to get laid off 6 months down the road, which isn't very likely.
Now, that's what people do. They come here to get a job knowing they're going to get laid off. And that's right. That's not very likely now that I think it through. Michael, AP did a fact check a while back too, right?
We actually looked at it when the Commerce Secretary, Sharon Decker, said something similar. She was saying that the unemployment rate in North Carolina was higher than in other states because people were moving here to find jobs. And they were basing that on an economic report from an NC State economist that was, I think, 3 years old and really didn't have any new data to back that up. So you once again have the governor saying something that doesn't have a lot of data to back it up. And you have to wonder, is he just misspeaking or is he making policy decisions based on information that when you dig down doesn't really have a factual basis to it?
And we heard a whole lot, too, over the last couple of weeks about the quote-unquote Carolina comeback, which has to do with the drop, the large drop in the state's unemployment rate. And this has been noted in national media. You know, it's close to 2%, I think. You know, and certainly, you know, the politicians are happy to take credit for that. However, that doesn't tell the whole story. And the numbers behind the story show a much more mixed picture, that our labor force is shrinking at the same time that people are moving into the state. You know, that doesn't tell you that people are running out and getting a lot of jobs. There's not a lot of jobs net created over the past year. And so, you know, I think we have to be careful about what the unemployment rate actually tells us, which is people that report that they are looking for work. If you've dropped out of the labor force, you don't count in those numbers.
Well, when you say the labor force is shrinking, do you mean the number of jobs in the state is shrinking or the people
labor
have dropped
force
out?
Is, labor force is people who are between the ages of 18 and 65 usually, who are either currently employed or are seeking employment. That's basically how it's defined.
All right. Well, let's turn to the Department of Health and Human Services. Continues to be in the spotlight. This time, Medicaid cards went out to the wrong people, almost 50,000 of them. Eldana Vash has apologized for them. Laura, let me stick with you. What's going on? Tell us, give us the background.
The background on this is they went out the Monday before New Year's. And then apparently they started telling the county agencies what was going on Tuesday, New Year's Eve. We started to ask questions, right, come about Thursday. And DHHS did not even admit the problem existed until after 5 o'clock on Friday of that week, after the station in Charlotte actually ran a story on it. So that's been part of the angst around this issue, is what did they know and when did they know it? She apologized this week. I deeply apologized. I mean, flat out apologized and said that it was also unacceptable that it had taken so long for that issue to make its way up to her. She said that she had not known about it until later in the week, and that's why it took so long to get the word out.
And Jessica, she had to face some angry legislators about this, but Republicans and Democrats asking tough questions.
Definitely. The questions came from both sides of the aisle. And Secretary Vash, I will point out, said that from what she understood, she blamed that accident on human error. Mm-hmm. She said that was why it happened, and that, as Laura said, it hadn't come to her attention. And they said partly it was the holidays, partly maybe there wasn't a good chain of communication all the way up, and that she really would have liked to know about it. So she did apologize, and she appeared contrite.
Medicaid reimbursement, also a big question. Doctors are suing over the state's ability to pay back in a timely way. They say it's a disaster. That's one. USDA, going back a little farther, has threatened to sanction the State Department of Health and Human Services because it says it's taking far too long to process food stamp applications. Michael Biesecker, Eldana Vash is still apparently the secretary. Is her position threatened?
Not as long as the governor continues to have confidence in her, and he professes to have complete confidence in her. That confidence among some Republican legislators seems to be waning a bit. You know, DHHS is the largest state agency when you look at the amount of the state budget that it accounts for, and it's always been difficult to manage. It deals with a lot of federal regulations. It deals with services that go to and affect a lot of people, that a lot of people rely on. And there's always been a history of things going wrong at DHHS. But in the last year, you've had this string of issues that seem to be traced back to mismanagement at the top or in the upper echelons of the department. And that is starting to do political damage to the governor.
Well, let me go ahead, Laura.
I was just going to say that, you know, I think One of the things that hasn't been reported on very much, although we try as we can, is a sort of the steady erosion of the upper management echelon at HHS. This happens. I mean, you're going to get changeover in personnel whenever you have a changeover administration. And with the first Republican governor in 20 years, you could honestly expect a lot of folks to leave or be replaced. But the trouble, you know, at least as it looks from the outside, is you had these people who had, you know, long, long careers as people who knew how to run particular programs, who were sort of summarily escorted out of the building, or who quit, or who decided to go find a different job or go to work for the people they used to regulate. And you end up with a real sort of void of institutional knowledge at the tops of these programs. And when you've got a new secretary and a whole new bunch of people, that's when you most need people who know how things work. And that's what they don't have.
Well, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, I was going to say there's a philosophical issue at play as well, which is when you run on the fact that government is broken and that government needs to be fixed and the private sector does things better, when you bring in new people without experience in government but that have experience in the private sector, there can be a culture clash, but also a deficit of knowledge. People don't know what they don't know. And, you know, the secretary, she didn't have experience running an agency like DHHS. Her chief policy advisor is a 24-year-old with no experience in running something like that. So some of those chickens are coming home to roost. I think they're learning on the job, and that's very apparent.
Well, it leads to questions, too. Again, the governor will come back and the secretary comes back and they make apologies and they try to explain things in the aftermath. But the question is there enough data? Does this governor have the right information? If he doesn't know that you can't get unemployment benefits from a state if you move in, maybe the policies are in a sense, deficient in data. Is that question, do voters start to worry about that? Do we see any reflection in the polls about a lack of confidence in the governor's ability to govern? Is he getting the right information?
Well, I'll tell you, we don't really know what information he's getting, although one would assume he would have good information. You know, the latest PPP poll, it's a Democratic affiliated polling outfit, pretty good numbers usually, shows some decline in his popularity numbers. And, you know, I think there's probably little to link that to, but DHHS and, you know, the constant sort of steady drip, the death by a thousand cuts that's coming out of that agency. Whether he has enough information, you know, usually governors surround themselves with people who really know what they're doing. And, you know, I know he's got some really great advisors, so I am at a loss to explain.
Yeah, but as Michael says, if you're bringing in people from outside government, government is a thing and it runs a certain way and it doesn't always run like a business, for better and for worse. But if you have people in there advising you who don't have experience in it, the advice you get might change. But what about in the legislature in terms of Republican support now for Vosh herself? Do you get any sense at all that there might be pressure now on the government, on the governor from his own party to make a change?
I have noticed a lot of questions from Republican legislators. I haven't seen a call or haven't heard that they really want her to step down. But I have heard some critical questions at some of these hearings, which I think is certainly warranted. Like Michael said, DHHS is a big agency. There's a lot of state money there, and people's health is at stake. So they are asking a lot of questions. But I don't think it's gone that far.
I think, though, that the new lawsuit may be an interesting development because
the
NC tracks, the Medicaid providers are suing the state, claiming that they were unable to get paid, unable to provide services. Some had to lay people off. Class action lawsuit. Let me tell you, the discovery in that case should be fascinating because they can go in and get, you know, so much of this sort of correspondence, communications, maybe that wouldn't even necessarily be public record. And we can try to find out exactly what was known about the problems with the system and when it was known. And so I think a lot of us, lawmakers, reporters, and just general public are going to be paying a lot of attention to that.
Though the system itself and its development dates back before this administration, right?
2003, I think, right?
As the governor is very quick to point out, They inherited some of these IT systems that are now giving them trouble. Of course, they made the choice to implement them when they did.
Right. And I'd just like to point out that we have seen lots of healthcare professionals, lots of doctors, representatives for hospitals come to the General Assembly. They are very upset about this because one of the many problems with this system is that there's a code for every procedure and every drug that's given, for example, to a Medicaid patient. OBGYN practices are especially hard hit because they have a very high number of patients who are on Medicaid. And when you're talking about pregnant women who are giving birth to the next generation in our state, it's it's pretty serious. So, for example, there weren't codes for at one point for the Tdap vaccine. There weren't codes for a drug that was used to prevent to help women who had very high risk pregnancies. And so those private practices were just absorbing the cost because they weren't being reimbursed. And so actually, I know of one practice where the billing manager came down to DHHS and stood in the lobby and said, "You can call the police to take me out, but I am not leaving until I get emergency funds because I can't meet payroll next month." And when you have problems like that happening, physicians coming to the legislature, billing heads coming to the legislature saying those things, you know, that crosses along both party lines.
Across party lines. But I'm wondering about the broader political impact of all of this. Doctors complain about slow Medicaid reimbursement. Food stamp recipients are complaining about applications being slow. 50,000 children had their medical information compromised. Teachers complain about low pay. Those are all sectors. Does this track politically? Because remember, if you're worried as a Republican, you've always got Obamacare in your back pocket when it's time to go to the polls. So what's Trump here?
Well, you know, Governor McCrory campaigned on fixing broken government. He campaigned on competence. So we're now in a situation where year in, the government will appear to many voters to still be having problems, to still be broken. The governor still says elements of the government that he oversees are broken. So he says that a year is not enough to fix those longstanding problems. You have to wonder if 4 years is enough. And in 2016, are we going to be hearing Governor McCrory run for reelection on a platform of fixing the broken government that he's overseen for 4 years? Now, the Republican campaign strategy, if you look at the early commercials from Tom Tillis and other Republicans running in 2014 and 2016, it's very clear they want the next election to be a referendum on President Obama and Obamacare. But when you look at the polling, you know, yes, Obamacare is unpopular. Yes, the president has less than 50% support in the state, but the Republicans aren't faring much better, if they are faring better. I believe the governor's approval ratings in the latest poll I saw were 37% approval.
Which is, I don't know how much higher that is than Bev Perdue's about the same time, about
right,
4 years ago.
So, you know, if your entire strategy is competence versus running against the president, it'll be interesting to see how that strategy plays out or if it modifies in the next year or the next 3 years.
I think a lot will depend, at least for the governor's political fate. I mean, let's remember, we're a long way out from 2016. I mean, forever, okay, in political terms. But a lot's going to depend on what people see him do in a leadership role. And I think it's been difficult because when he came in 2012, the Republican legislative leaders had already been here, gotten very comfortable in the last 2 years. There wasn't exactly a leadership gap for him to fill. He's been trying to work that out since he's been here. But, you know, I think when we're starting to see these problems, you know, across his own agencies, especially in one that deals with, you know, billions of federal dollars, entitlement programs that are non-negotiable for states to fulfill, you know, I think there is going to be a point at which he is going to have to do or say something about taking responsibility for this and making it work. Otherwise, I think he's going to have a very difficult time campaigning as a fixer.
This will be a year of action. You know those slogans never go over,
sure,
well with me. Let's change the subject quickly, Laura. The state's Energy and Mining Commission on Tuesday voted unanimously to allow chemicals used in fracking to remain secret. This has been a big debate for a long time. We thought that commission was going to go the other way, but now we won't know.
Well, let's remember, these are recommendations, and legislators still have to approve them. So they can choose when they come back next year. They can choose to vote differently on them. And this would be 2015. But, you know, it's one of those things. I think I remember hearing that Diener, Department of Environment and Natural Resources, actually did not want the trade secrets because they were afraid that would make them a target for lawsuits. That was what they said anyway. There are some states that require lockbox, you know, where you have to turn them over, but people can't see them unless,
right,
there's an emergency. There are other states that don't require them at all.
Michael, what's next for fracking? Yeah. And
well, what's going on in West Virginia? It's not fracking, but it's certainly bringing people's attention to the fact that there are chemicals that get leaked into our environment that people don't know about until there's a human health effect or a potential human health effect. And certainly, I think even in extremely busy, business-friendly West Virginia, people are now asking questions about how were state inspectors never at this place? How did we not know what was in those tanks? And when fracking comes to North Carolina, I think that there will be a lot of questions, a lot of concerns among members of the public about, is this getting in my well water? And if so, what is it? And the State Environment and Natural Resources Department won't know because by law, they're not going to know.
I want to thank you all for being on the program today. We are out of time. Michael Biesecker, a reporter for Associated Press, Laura Leslie, WRAL's Capital Bureau Chief, Jessica Jones, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thanks.
Thank you, Frank.
Coming up, the music of Heather McIntyre live on the State of Things. Do stay tuned.